From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast.
Today, in a big week for people making big decisions, we're looking at the top candidates for Game Week 8 selection. Players who get plenty of crosses in boxes. Players with great precedence against their opponents this week. We'll also check out the biggest regrets you've had so far this season. Could be a long show. And your captaincy candidates in the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Hello, FPL Manager. I'm James Richardson, and I am joined today by a pretty expert panel to brief us for Game Week 8. Who's with us? We've got one half of the FPL family, Lee Bonfield.
Hello, James.
Hello, Lee. You picked up 62 points for your team, Little Beauties, in Game Week 7. Alongside you, there's former pro, now Premier League analyst, Adrian Clark, 68 points with his savoury hands. Hi, Adrian.
Hello. Yeah, it was a bounce back week for me, much needed.
Nice. Good. Also here, author and football writer Tom Williams. Yes, 81 points for Tom's Netflix and Chillwell. So you're top of the charts for points and for best team name as well, Tom, this week.
Hello, James. Yes, thanks very much. Yeah, quite happy with that.
Excellent. I'm very much bottom of the chart with my 56 points for Hasty Signings FC. Tom, you've moved into the top 400k managers worldwide, which is extraordinary. What's your best ever finish?
Not that I have ever looked this up, of course, but I think I've got into the top 40,000 before,
okay,
or thereabouts.
Come on, you know your exact rank, Tom, don't you? You know it.
It's
the exact
around 40,000.
Yeah, it's around 42,362, yeah.
So where did you pick up all your points in Game Week 7, Tom?
They were spread across the board quite nicely. I had Jack Grealish, who picked up 15 points. Callum Wilson picked up 12. Captain Harry Kane, Pedro Neto and Mo Salah and Dominic Calvert-Lewin all scored, which is very helpful.
Nice.
Clean sheet for Ben Chilwell. And then a little bit of luck in that I had Tariq Lamptey on my bench, but he came in for Roman Saiz, who unexpectedly didn't feature for Wolves. And so that bumped my tally up past the magic 80 points mark.
Delighted for you. All right. Well, you mentioned some big point scorers there. It sounds like you didn't have the biggest returner from Game Week 7, who was James Ward-Prowse. James Ward-Prowse, who I'm proud to say was flagged up on this very podcast last week as a very sensible acquisition by Daniel Storey, who then proceeded to not include him in his wildcard team.
I mean, I had James Ward-Prowse from the first week of the season,
right,
and kept faith with him for the first 4 weeks, I think, and then bombed him out when I did my wildcard. Because I was convinced he was going to score big points this season. I just missed the boat, sadly.
That's interesting, Tom, because watching his performance last weekend, I was still kind of haunted by the fear that he's exactly the kind of player I would bring in, keep faith with for a couple of weeks, but he would never return to that. Do you think he's turned a bit of a corner? Because he's never returned consistently before.
This is true. I mean, Southampton collectively have turned a corner and are winning games and scoring goals. I mean, the thing with Ward-Prowse is that he takes a lot of the set pieces. He's got a fantastic right foot. So there's always a chance that he's gonna pop up with a decent points haul. He's not someone who threatens as much from open play. But yeah, you know, I think if Southampton have got good fixtures, he's worth looking at.
Yeah, this weekend they're against Newcastle, who concede huge amounts of shots from set pieces, more than any other side, or certainly last season, those were the figures, which, you know, given Ward-Prowse's area of specialisation is pretty interesting. Anybody tempted by getting JWP in this week?
I am. Yeah, certainly. Newcastle at home, as you say, is fantastic. And then I think Wolves away is a bit trickier. Wolves have looked a bit better defensively, but, you know, two back-to-back double-digit hauls for Ward-Prowse is definitely worthy of our attention. Only selected by 4.8% of teams as well, James. So he's still sort of proper differential territory.
I'm not sure James Ward-Prowse is going to chip in with that many goals from open play like he did against Everton, though, I have to say. Because two-man midfield. He doesn't get forward as often as perhaps he would do in a team that had one striker, and Southampton, of course, have two. So you are pretty reliant on his set pieces, which are really good. And they've got a couple of giants, particularly Vestergaard, who dwarfed the Villa defence last time out. So yeah, if you back the Saints to score from a flurry of wide free kicks and corners, definitely go for it. But recent history says that even though he's a brilliant taker, they don't score that many from them.
Okay. Last week's kind of impulse buy was Patrick Bamford, who did the usual buy, kind of then blanking in the following match. He'd been brought in by half a million managers. Have we all missed the boat, or was that just a slight speed bump along the road?
I think the fact that Leeds are such an attacking team, and the fact that Bamford is basically guaranteed to start every game, means he is a useful player to have. But if you look at their upcoming fixtures, Leeds, they're away at Crystal Palace this weekend. They've then got Arsenal, Everton away, Chelsea away, and West Ham. So although it's not beyond the realms of possibility that he's going to find the net in those games, it's not the best run of fixtures. So if you don't have him, I wouldn't be performing any sort of FPL gymnastics to try and bring him into your squad.
They suit Leeds' style, though, don't they, Tom? If you look at the way they counter-attack, particularly away from home, and a lot of Bamford's big points also have come away from home because of the ferocity at which they counter-attack. And those teams are going to attack, you know, when they go to Everton, they go to Chelsea, go to Crystal Palace. That could suit their style.
It could. But, as valuable an asset as Bamford could be, I'm not sure I'd be sort of going out of my way and completely restructure my attack to bring him in if I didn't have him.
I've got a little stat for you. I don't know if it'll persuade you, Tom. It doesn't sound like it will. He's had 27 shots in the Premier League so far this season. Only two players have had more, Harry Kane and Mo Salah. So he's someone that gets on the end of chances. Hmm. And I agree with Lee. I think home and away, Patrick Bamford will provide a threat. He scored, of course, at Liverpool, at in-form Aston Villa, didn't he? So I wouldn't worry too much about the fixtures.
Okay, have you got him, Adrian?
I had him, and I'm kind of want to bring him back in. but I'm going sort of big name heavy up top at the moment, so there's no place for him.
Your name's not big enough, Patrick Bamford. Sorry about that. A couple of other things before we get on to the Game Week 8 fixtures. One is to flag up Jota, who is proving to be an extraordinarily brilliant acquisition for Liverpool in real terms. And what about in FPL terms? Is he somebody we need to be getting in, particularly after his midweek hat-trick in the Champions League?
He's really hit the ground running, isn't he, Jota? I mean, I must admit, when the signing was announced on the same day as Thiago, I was really excited about Thiago, clearly. And Jota went a little bit under my radar, and I think a lot of FPL managers' radars. But I think we know what we're getting with him. Certainly when we, as FPL managers, had him for Wolves last season, he does like to get forward. He's very attacking. So at 4.8% team selected by, so he's still major differential. 6.4, so he's going to cost you a little bit in that midfield. But do you pair him with Mo Salah, or do you have him, or Mane indeed, or do you have him instead of? That's a more difficult
question. Would you think that Klopp's now going to be maybe thinking about bringing him in instead of Firmino in that kind of classic Liverpool front three?
Got to, hasn't he? I mean, the guy has scored 6 in his last 4 appearances in all competitions. He's got a goal every 41 minutes. He's on fire. I don't know how Klopp could look him in the eye this weekend, for example, and say, sorry, Diogo, you're on the bench. I think you have to play your players in form, don't you?
In football terms, Firmino brings more than just stats and goals. You know, what you get from Firmino is you get more from Mane and Salah when you play him alongside them. I think Klopp will be perfectly happy with what Jota's doing. He's the ultimate sort of, you know, bench option. He's the ultimate backup option. But I think from an FPL perspective, the fact that he's not a guaranteed starter means that although he could come on in games and score 8 goals, I wouldn't be looking to bring him in. And up until the point that he definitively supplants Firmino from the starting 11, which I suspect might never happen.
Right. It is a good point. He did play, he was probably the most central of the three in the game at Atalanta, where he scored the hat-trick. So he kind of proved to his manager that he could be the alternative there. And obviously in that game, crucially, Mane and Salah both scored and both played well. So it was a double whammy. He scored the hat-trick, but he also showed the manager that he can help facilitate the two big guys either side as well. So, but yeah, I definitely take your viewpoint on it. But I don't know, in Klopp's shoes, I, I'd have to play him, I think.
Yeah, and I think from the sound of it, also in yours, Adrian, it's not the craziest thing in the world to get Jota in. It might be one of those risks that really does reward you going forward. One other thing, just before, as I say, we get onto the Game Week 8 matches, is to flag up the underperforming popular choices between the posts. All your kind of classic 4.5 keepers, whether Martinez, you've got no points, same for Ryan. McCarthy got 3, Schmeichel 3, Pope 3. All of them failing to deliver. And this has been a problem for a week or two now. Is it worth, on the basis of that, finding that spare half a million or so and moving up into the kind of 5 mil bracket, which could bring you some pretty tasty returns?
The last couple of weeks have suggested that might not be a bad approach, because we have seen the big teams in particular starting to tighten up a little bit. There have been much fewer goals in the games involving Arsenal, notably.
So,
Man City,
who would you
Liverpool.
Go for, Tom? Who would we be looking for?
I think the most sort of gettable, the most sort of attractively priced goalkeepers in that sort of bracket are Edouard Mendy, who's obviously made an incredible start at Chelsea with 3 clean sheets in 3 Premier League games. I think Bernd Leno as well. Arsenal, unexpectedly, the tightest defensive unit in the land. And I think he's the same sort of price. I'm very wary about spending big on any defensive asset this season, just because we have seen so many goals scored and so many peculiar matches, and players are tired, and we're getting lots of strange scorelines. But I think if that trend continues, I think it might be worth perhaps upgrading one of your 4.5ers to someone at one of the bigger clubs who is going to guarantee more clean sheets.
Lee and Adrian, what do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, Arsenal in particular have looked defensively really, really solid, haven't they? What I will say about both of those teams are there are defenders in both of those sides that I've got my eye on as well. So going back to Tom's point about the erratic nature of the Premier League, as we've seen over the last few weeks, would I want to double up with, say, Leno or Mendy and then a Bellerin, Tierney, Chilwell, Zouma? I don't know. I don't think so, because I don't trust anyone, frankly, for clean sheets at the moment. But if you can find a few extra quid, then yes, I would go and have a look at both Mendy and Leno.
Come on, Adrian.
Well, I've got Leno, and I start with him. I had Nick Pope last season for the whole season, and he delivered a stack of points. So yeah, I'm not saying that Arsenal are going to have the best defensive record for the entirety of this season, but when you consider they've been away to Liverpool, been away to City, been away to United, and they still have the best defensive record in the league, yeah, I think it bodes well for Arsenal defenders and keepers. Hector Bellerin, I think, is someone to keep your eye on if you're looking for an Arsenal defender. He's 100% the first choice right back, playing miles better than he did last season. And he's getting into the final third. Think about the chances he created against Manchester United, or the chances Arsenal created. Most of them came from Hector. So Leno and Bellerin, I think, are interesting picks.
Okay, very good. Well, let's have a quick look then at what awaits in Game Week 8. Game Week 8, fancy managers. We are halfway to a new wildcard. Hurrah! But what we do have this weekend is another Friday deadline. Not only that, but it's 4 p.m. UK time this Friday. Crikey. 90 minutes before Brighton and Burnley, who will be revelling in the prestigious 5:30 Friday slot for their opening game of Game Week 8. 4 o'clock, get your teams in Friday afternoon. So there's another game on Friday as well, actually a little bit later on. Saints taking on Newcastle. Saturday, you've got a big game at Goodison at lunchtime as Everton host Man United. Palace take on Leeds. Chelsea take on Sheffield United. And the day closes out with West Ham testing out Fulham's new one-game winning streak. Sunday, West Brom Spurs at midday. Leicester Wolves, and then the big one, Man City Liverpool, with Arsenal Aston Villa to mop up any stragglers late Sunday night. Which one of those fixtures made a ka-ching noise when I read them out to you, Lee?
Oh, the one that made that noise for me was the Spurs game. I think if you're going to pit a team in form like Spurs against a team who defensively have looked, well, actually, I was going to say terrible West Brom, but actually in the last few games, they've looked slightly better defensively. Right. However, for me, that's more to do with the opposition they've been playing, Burnley, Brighton and Fulham. If you look at some of the other teams that they've played this season, Southampton put 2 past them, Chelsea 3, Everton 5, Leicester 3. They all had no problem dismantling the baggage. So I expect Kane and Son to do the same.
Interesting chat around the Bonfield breakfast table then, because it was the other half of the FPL family, Sam Bonfield, who last week on this show was bigging up West Brom defenders as sound buys.
Has she had any reaction to that at all?
I haven't asked her about West Brom defenders. She's certainly not got any in her FPL team, so that probably tells you more than I can tell you.
What about triple captaining Son or Kane for this one? Spurs seem to be scoring more goals away from home. I know that no one wants to do it this early, but on paper, this is the easiest away game in the league, and you've got a team that are absolutely hammering everyone on their travels. Are you tempted by that, Lee?
Well, I am. And in particular, I'm tempted by Heung-min Son. I know, I guess, recency bias suggests you look back at the previous game and you say, well, Kane's on penalties and, you know, he's deploying this slightly...
Kane backing into Ivanovic. Yeah.
Yeah, so that absolutely could happen. And he's being more creative, of course, Harry Kane. But Son, I think, is the one that I'm going to captain potentially this week, because if I look at the chances that West Brom have conceded, particularly down that right-hand side, even since they switched to the back four and they changed it up a little bit, that chances conceded statistic has risen from 10.8 per game to 14 per game. So they are really weak down that right, and I expect Son to exploit that at the weekend.
On that, by the way, big chances conceded, which I always think is a good metric, because it just doesn't count every shot. It's real high quality chances. The three promoted teams have conceded the most big chances. Fulham and West Brom, I think 17 each. Leeds, 16. Next, by the way, Manchester United and Liverpool.
Wow.
Liverpool and Manchester United are conceding a lot of chances, high quality ones. So, yeah. So if anyone's thinking about Liverpool defenders and ditching them, the stats do tell you that might not be the worst choice.
Well, that is a really hot topic, and it's probably been one since almost the start of the season, given the amount of money we've had to invest to have Liverpool defenders and the way that they've underperformed. How many, quick straw poll, do we have in at the moment? I've got Robbo. Tom?
I've got zero. I started with Trent Alexander-Arnold and then got rid of him quite quickly. And there are quite a few teams around that have still got both Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. I don't feel like I have space in my defence for either. So for the people still plugging away with both of them and hoping that Liverpool's defensive luck is going to turn at some point, I'd say, keep doing it, please.
Very public spirited of you, Tom. Lee, how many have you got?
Just the one, just Robertson.
All right. And you, Adrian?
Yeah, Robertson as well. On the flip side, by the way, half of the shots, I wrote a piece on Liverpool this week, half of the shots Liverpool have faced on target this season have gone in. Ooh. Half, which is, I find remarkable, really. So that, I believe, is unsustainable. So in a way, you could say that Liverpool have been unlucky to concede as many chances, but that's really down to the fact that they're high quality chances that they're offering up.
Okay. Adrian, your game, I think, you wanted to talk about was Sheffield United's trip to Chelsea. So this is a Chelsea team who've had three straight clean sheets against extremely shot-shy Sheffield United. Yeah. Is it time to get in loads of Chelsea players?
Well, I am tempted, really I am, because I've got Robertson and I could trade him in for Chilwell or Zuma and free up some cash.
Which would you go for?
It's a tough one. I think that Chilwell will play almost every week and create more. But Zuma seems to be getting on the end of all the set pieces, doesn't he?
So, what a header, yeah.
I think maybe Zuma at the price, to be honest. I think because he's that bit cheaper, I would go down his route. And Ziyech was brilliant, wasn't he, against Burnley. And he's definitely a midfielder that's tempting me. And Timo Werner, I'm hearing, is likely to be rested for the Champions League game. So... he could be nice and sharp for the weekend. And yeah, it's just not happening for Sheffield United. So yeah, Chelsea, I think, it's well worth considering bringing in one or two of their players for this weekend. And the fixtures moving forward aren't too bad either.
Chelsea are the team with the most fancy points between their players of all the Premier League sides. I guess most people, perhaps because of the amount of competition for places up front and therefore doubts over who's going to be the starters, are looking at the defenders, whether it's Mendy or Zuma or indeed Chilwell or any of the options at the back. But Ziyech is massively transferred in this week after his 14 points. What Chelsea do you have, Tom? What Chelsea are you looking at getting in?
I've currently got Ben Chilwell, who's my only Chelsea player currently, but I really like the look of Ziyech. He was on my watch list from the start of the season. He's reasonably priced. I think he's, about 8 million. Fantastic left foot. He's going to take a lot of set pieces. I mean, I want to wait to see that he is a regular starter before bringing him in. But as soon as it becomes apparent that he is starting games regularly, I think I'm gonna look to do that, because he's just such a dangerous player. If he's playing regularly, I think he'll prove a pretty reliable source of points.
Lee?
I agree with Adrian. If you want to save a few quid, maybe Zouma, but Chilwell, I think, is worth the premium. I currently have Pulisic as well, so I was obviously pretty aggrieved when he pulled up in training in the previous game week. And now I face a very nervous Frank Lampard press conference this week, because right. I'd really like him to be available for Sheffield United at home. Mm. If he's not, then maybe a straight switch to Ziyech is on the cards.
Is it part of your weekly schedule to check in on each press conference then, Lee? I'm just interested in your dedication to FPL.
It absolutely is, Adrian. Yeah, and if my boss at work is listening, I'm not watching Sky Sports News at all on a Thursday or Friday.
Good to know, Lee. Zouma is, by the way, the defender with the most points in FPL after netting his third goal of the season in that clash with Burnley. Tom, you want to talk about Leicester Wolves. Leicester, who were the stars of that remarkable game on Monday night away at Leeds.
Yeah, we saw from their victory at Elland Road how dangerous Leicester can be in an attacking sense. Jamie Vardy's picked up 21 points across the last two game weeks. Yuri Tielemans was a standout player against Leeds with 15 points. Harvey Barnes as well with 8 points. But the one thing I would say about Leicester is that they've tended to do better away from home than they have at home this season. The big eye-catching wins they've had, Man City, Arsenal, Leeds, were all on the road. They've actually lost the last two at home against West Ham and against Villa. Wolves have really sort of tightened up recently. So although Leicester's form is good, I think this could be quite a tight game. The issue with Wolves, as quite a lot of us found out last week, is that you can't say with certainty who's going to be picked in their defence. I was stung as a Roman Saiss owner when he was left out. Max Kilman has come into the team. He's only 4.3 million, 13% ownership. If he holds on to his place, I think he could be a decent investment. Ryan Aitnouri, very highly rated French left-back, came into the team and scored last weekend. He's only 5 million, 0.2% ownership, so a real differential. And just the last
points.
Wolves player I was going to mention was Pedro Neto, who I had and who picked up 7 points and who's been getting into good positions without necessarily that being reflected in his FPL points haul. So, yeah, I think it's a hard game to call this one, but just because of Leicester's impressive recent results, I wouldn't discount picking Wolves players.
All right. And Wolves players, though, the only thing to bear in mind about those is that looking forward beyond Game Week 8, their fixtures take a really dangerous-looking turn. Tell you what, then, having had a quick race through the Game Week 8 games, let's take a quick check what lies beyond in the long view. Longview coloured chart time. Grab yours at the Premier League's fixture difficulty rating page. You can find the FDR over at PremierLeague.com, of course. Give you a clear look at who's got a tough run coming up and whose games look like lush fields at harvest time. So now I mentioned Wolves having not good fixtures, to wit, they are away at Leicester, then they've got Southampton, then they've got Arsenal and Liverpool, then Villa, then Chelsea. It's not great. Also, with the bad fixtures klaxon ringing in their ears, are Spurs, which is going to involve some tough decisions around the FPL community, not least Shay, the FPL family. Lee, what's your? I mean, you've looked at that. Have you kind of thought maybe it's time to swap a Kane or a Son for one of the other big names available?
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? Could be. I mean, certainly not this week against West Bromwich Albion. So don't
right.
do it this week.
After that, though, you've got Man City and then Chelsea and
yes.
then Arsenal.
Yes, yeah.
And then Palace. But then after that, you've got Liverpool and Leicester and Wolves.
Yeah, it looks a bit tricky for them, doesn't it? And I must admit, that sort of mini fixture swing at game week 10, if you look at the way that those Spurs fixtures are getting worse, actually, on the other side of the coin, you've got Man City's fixtures that start to take an upturn. You've got Burnley at home, Fulham at home and West Brom at home between 10 and 13. Four fantastic-looking home games there. So, yeah, there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to look at, you know, Kane and Son and say, well, actually, maybe my funds are better spent in Kevin De Bruyne or whichever number nine is available to Pep Guardiola at the time, which at the moment looks like Gabriel Jesus.
Right. Manchester City, in a couple of game weeks' time, then getting that swing into much nicer fixtures. Same is true for Leicester, who Tom was just flagging up for us, which means we maybe don't want to make a transfer for their players right now, but we are going to maybe, if you're thinking about bringing some of those high-priced Man City assets, for example, you might be wanting to bank a transfer or two over the next couple of weeks so that you can make a swoop without incurring a points hit. Is that something that we're currently mapping out at the moment, Adrian?
I am, yeah, definitely. I'm desperate to get either De Bruyne or Sterling into my team. I really am, but at the moment I can't justify it, not with the Liverpool game coming up and beyond that, Spurs. But yeah, you look past it and it could be rich pickings for those guys. So yeah, I think I will dip into the market this weekend and then look to hold off next time out so that I can have the two for match week 10. That's how I'm going to play it.
Not that I'm a massive nerd about these things, but I've actually made a note to do any transfers in game week 9 because I think that run of City fixtures is so appetizing. I want to have the flexibility that two transfers will give me that week. So I think, like Adrian, I might make a transfer this week, sit on my hands in game week 9, injuries and suspensions and COVID-19 and all the rest permitting, and then make a couple of changes for game week 10 to really attack that nice run of City fixtures.
All right. Checking out the FDR chart, Villa have decent games coming up. Newcastle are not too bad either if you're maybe having a look at someone like a Callum Wilson, who's now the second highest scoring forward in the game. But I think that the team who really stand out in terms of what awaits them over the next 6 weeks are West Ham. West Ham, who sailed beyond all our expectations through their really difficult opening 7 games, and now have Fulham coming up, and then Sheffield United, and then Aston Villa. The games stay decent till Christmas for West Ham.
This is when the wheels come off for West Ham. This is what West Ham do, isn't
no,
it?
No, come on.
When we're all expecting them to having got through that quite tricky run of fixtures in a decent position, we now think they're really going to hit their straps. But I think the one issue I'd say about West Ham is that they've proved very effective as a counter-attacking team this season. They're not going to be able to play in quite the same way at home. So although there are a lot of attractive West Ham players in the game, I'm not yet 100% convinced.
So what's come off along with the wheels is Mikel Antonio, and I'm not sure if we have a forecast at the moment about when he's going to be back. But without him in the team, how much impact does that have on the other assets that we might be looking at, the likes of Suchek or even at the back, Cresswell, Kufal? What are your thoughts, say, Adrian?
Well, I like West Ham defenders. I haven't got any yet, but looking at these fixtures, I'd be tempted. They're not quite as cheap as I was anticipating. And Cresswell has already climbed to 5.1. Now, of course, he takes a lot of the set pieces and he whips crosses in open play as well from that left side centre-back position. He's been great this season. Masuaku is cheaper, 4.5. He gets forward quite nicely. Kufau on the other side, 4.5. So there are some good options there. And another reason I like West Ham defenders is that they're not giving up good chances. I've talked about big chances against. In terms of expected goals against, West Ham are really low. They've given hardly anything away, and Liverpool had to work really hard to beat them the other day as well, didn't they? So they're far more solid this year than they have been, and for that reason, yeah, I wouldn't advise against Hammers defenders. Going forward, Fornals and Bowen, I think, will come to the fore in Antonio's absence. I couldn't jump on Haller. I don't think you can rely on him to score the goals, but Bowen and Fornals, decent value.
But in general, you wouldn't advise against getting them, but it's not like you're racing out and taking points hits to get Hammers in. Tom is of a similar opinion. Lee, are you looking at those fixtures thinking, yes, I will invest in West Ham?
Well, I'm invested already. So I have Suchek. He's been in my team for some time, and the underlying stats have suggested that he is due, but he's been due for 7 weeks now, and I'm kind of waiting for him to be overdue. I think I'm slightly more in Tom's camp at the moment in terms of just waiting to see that West Ham Fulham game. I think there's absolutely points there, but the absence of Antonio, as you mentioned, James, is going to fundamentally change their dynamic. It's going to change the way they play. Like Adrian, I was not that impressed with Allaire against Liverpool. He's pretty static. You know, everyone was lording over Nat Phillips and how he played for Liverpool there. But goodness me, he was given an easy time, frankly, by Sebastian Allaire. So with him up there, will the likes of Bowen and Fornals and the guys that Adrian mentioned, will they flourish in quite the same way with him rather than Antonio? I'm not sure. So on that basis, I'll keep Suchek. Happy to keep him for those fixtures, but I probably won't double up on West Ham just for a couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, next up, let's have a look at what we can learn from the catalogue of reproach and recrimination that we've drawn with this week's Twitter question. What's your biggest FPL regret of the season so far? Yes, FPL Manager, this week we asked you on Twitter with the hashtag FPLPod, what's the biggest regret you've had so far this season? Got a bunch of replies. Touchingly, no one mentioned this podcast, which is heartening. What did get mentioned? Well, Alex says Mitrovic. I had him throughout only for me to sell him for Mopé this last weekend. Mopé didn't feature. Mitrovic has now registered 2 assists and is probably expecting a goal. Eric says selling Salah prior to game week 1, broken heart. Selling Bamford in game week 5. Selling Son in game week 2, broken heart. In game week 4 when he was an injury doubt. And always making the wrong captaincy picks. I hear you, Eric. Desmond benching Chilwell during his Chelsea debut. And Grealish in Liverpool's horrific thrashing at Villa, respectively. And Gio Guna keeping faith with Aubameyang as my captain for 5 straight blank weeks and then selling him ahead of game week 7 for Mane, who, of course, blanked Aubameyang. And by the way, if you were listening to Julien Laurent's wrestling with his conscience last week about Aubameyang, I can confirm he kept him in the team. So there you go. He was rewarded for his loyalty at Julien. Crikey. What's been your biggest regret so far, Tom?
I mean, without sounding too smug, I've not had any massive regret.
Adrian. This is the regret section.
I was going to say, as mentioned, I had James Ward-Prowse at the beginning of the season. I wore my JWP t-shirt. I went to bed in my JWP pyjamas for the first 4 weeks and I got nothing from it. Bombed him out and now he's scored 28 points in the last 2 weeks. So that's
what, a small What regret. Is your nighttime wear going forward? Are you going to be back in the JWP gym jams?
Might go for some Wilfred Zaha gym jams this week.
Ooh. Right, that must be quite a sight. Lee?
Oh, biggest regrets. Well, I got mine out early doors, I think, James. Having watched the All or Nothing documentary, I was absolutely convinced that Mourinho was going to get a tune out of Dele Alli this season. Wow. Brought him in for game week 1 and, yeah, didn't work out too well there.
No, indeed not. Adrian, what's been your biggest regret of the season so far?
So many. two big mistakes. Bamford, I ditched prior to his hat-trick at Aston Villa. And Kane, I just wish I'd stuck with him. I had him at the start of the season. And Spurs were really poor, weren't they, against Everton, you remember? Mm. And on the basis of that flat performance, I lost faith very quickly in Spurs. And then, of course, they went and destroyed Manchester United. And Kane's become this unexpected assist machine, hasn't he? So, those are my two big errors.
Speaking of regrets, can I mention a friend of mine who I won't name for fear of humiliating him? But he, in a fit of panic, played his wild card a few weeks ago and subsequently scored about 26 points.
Is it me, Tom?
It's not you, James. I would tell you if it was you. I calculated how many points he would have scored if he'd left his team exactly
never.
As it
no,
was.
Don't do that.
And it was 95 points, which would have been the biggest score all season in the Colwyn Bay Lads mini league. So let that be a lesson to you all.
Yeah, it is a lesson, but it's a lesson that I'm going to be learning next season as well, because that's been my biggest regret so far, playing the wild card too early. It made total sense when I did it. I'd had all the information I needed to be able to make the choices going forward. But of course, all that information was totally invalid. FPL reality is a little bit like dream reality. You know, when like 1 minute you're sitting there eating a sausage roll, but then you're sat on top of a banana and the world's a balloon, or do you know? And then a week, and then a second later, it's something quite different. And that is FPL. And there I was playing it in sausage roll terms, and all of a sudden it was banana. And do you know? We've all been there. Maybe by now things are taking shape, and we you can make more consistent choices. But I went too early with that wildcard. And yeah, I regret it, much like
this part of the podcast has taken a real turn, hasn't it? With sausages and pyjamas and bananas and all sorts going on. interesting section.
It's FPL. What can I tell
I'm still stunned by Mr. No Regrets over there, Mr. Tom Williams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You watch, I'll score about 7 points this week and it'll all blow up in my face.
Well, next up, it's about perhaps the biggest decision of all, the key call for FPL managers, your captaincy pick. All right, anybody doing any transfers this week, or have done any transfers this week, or have decided to plump for a player based on what they've heard in the last half hour or so, Lee?
I will be looking very closely, as I said before, at the Frank Lampard press conference. If Pulisic is fit, I'm probably going to roll my transfer. If he's not, if he's out for a week, maybe I keep him. If he's out for longer, maybe I switch to Ziyech, but I'd like something definitive, please, okay. Mr. Lampard. That would be good.
Adrian, what would you like? What are you getting in?
I'm worried about Danny Ings. He's been a great servant to me, but this knee injury, he's a big doubt for the weekend. Do I stick or twist? Do I keep him or not? I think I'll probably just switch him out. I've got spare change, so it's either Jamie Vardy or Timo Werner. Based on the fixtures, not form, I'm leaning towards Werner.
Wow. Okay. And Tom?
Well, despite having talked up Pedro Neto and Wolves' chance of a counter-attacking win at Leicester, I'm thinking of subbing him out and bringing in Wilfried Zaha,
who blanked
last week. But Palace have got a decent run of fixtures, home to Leeds, away at Burnley, home to Newcastle, away at West Brom. Yeah. So that's the move I'm looking to do this week.
Excellent, excellent. And what about captaincy picks then? Tom, let's start with you. Who gets the armband?
Harry Kane had the armband last week and proved himself worthy of it, so I'm going to keep it on him for this weekend.
Okay, Lee?
I'll also be going Spurs, but I'm going to go for Heung-min Son for all of the reasons that I mentioned before about the weakness down the right-hand side of West Brom. So, yeah, it'll be Son for me.
Right, and Adrian?
Yeah, it has to be Spurs, I think. Cheating Harry Kane. I'm going to stick with him. Going to avoid the trip. Just under principle, I'm never going to triple captain Harry Kane again because I'm still haunted by last season, home to Newcastle. Did it very early in the season and Spurs just had an absolute stinker. So, yeah, no triple, but I'll give him the armband.
So far, I've been very much in the church of always giving it to Mo Salah, the notion being that he averages so many points over the season that instead of flip-flopping, if you just leave it with him, you'll come out ahead. But this week, I am so tempted with Man City for Liverpool and with Spurs with that fixture. I think I might be swayed. Anyway, we have more on that next week. FBL listener, remember, whatever you're doing with your team, get it done by 4 p.m. this Friday, or even earlier if you like, but 4 p.m. Friday, that's the deadline, and it is an early one. If you want any more top FBL content in the meantime, like the FBL show, then just head over to PremierLeague.com, where there's also loads of great content and research from The Scout. We will be back next Wednesday. Many thanks in the meanwhile to Lee, to Tom, and to Adrian.
Bye, James.
Bye.
Thanks, James. Bye.
And to you, FPL manager. Have yourselves a great game week, and we'll see you next Wednesday.